Really better be careful when I tell you that the Republicans used the nuclear option last night because of all the things that are going on. That was in Congress for the SCOTUS vote. Supreme Court justice going to be voted on today. It's probably going to come out, what, 55-48?
52-48, probably.
Well, they could have added a few more senators. 100 isn't necessarily a hard, fast rule.
Yeah. 55-45?
It is.
I think it's because there was two votes that happened last night. And the second one was for an up or down vote, and I think it went 55-45. One was to stop it, and that went down party lines.
Yep.
And this one is expected now that Schumer released everybody and said, look, if you're in a red state and you got to vote, we got to vote. And that's when that vote went 55-45. So they got a few Democrats.
Yeah, you'll get Heitkamp, Donnelly, Manchin.
That's what's going to probably happen here in a few minutes. So you're going to have a new Supreme Court
justice. You know the story. I was just making fun of your math skills.
Shut up. and then gold is up. Stock market is down. And the world is in real chaos. And I don't know how to predict the White House. I'm going to give you a couple of stories. Stockholm, three people are dead this morning. There was a terror attack. What's going to happen with North Korea? And I want to talk to you politically here for a second and give you a scenario that I think is, you may not agree, but I think likely to happen. And we go there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Let me tell you about the war that is happening right now with the Trump supporters. The alt-right, who love Russia and do not want us in war. In fact, the alt-right is very nationalist. But they want to pull back and bring the armies back into the United States. And they saw Donald Trump as a guy who would do that. And the reason why they saw him as that guy is because he said that's who he was. I don't believe that. I haven't believed that. You know, here's a guy who said we can't get mixed up in Iran, in Iraq. Let Russia take care of Syria. And last night he made a very bold and decisive move. It's a risky move. I think with the timing of China being in there, I think it was providential because I'm hoping that it will show China that this guy will move on his own and they don't want us moving in North Korea. I don't want to be moving in North Korea, but something has to be done and maybe China will get involved in this and maybe they will stop North Korea. Time will tell. But I want to take you down the road and move ahead and let's just look at things that are possible and ask, are they probable to happen? You're already seeing Donald Trump having historic lows of what, 37% approval rating?
Yeah, he's ranging between 36 and 43, 44.
Okay. And historic lows. No president has ever been that low at this fast point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's certainly moving that along quicker than, because I mean, most presidents hit a low point, and this low point is not historically low for a president.
No, but it is
at this point because of the honeymoon.
Speed,
right. There's usually a honeymoon period where everyone's at 65% for a few months.
Okay. So, why is his approval rating that low? Well, it started pretty low in the first place. And then he did the Muslim ban, which wasn't a Muslim ban, but he called it a Muslim ban or a ban when he signed it. It was thrown together. And who threw it together? Who led that?
I mean, it was a Bannon.
It was a Bannon.
Bannon move.
Okay, Bannon move. Then that hurt him badly. Then the next thing that he did,
and remember, also they brought it back up, and it's again been overturned. So it's happened twice now.
Correct. He starts with healthcare, and who is the architect of healthcare? Paul Ryan, and Bannon. And Bannon is the one that says, don't worry, you're going to be able to get the Freedom Caucus to fold. You just hold their feet to the fire and tell them that they're going to be primaried and you'll get them to fold.
In fact, Bannon was reportedly the one who actually delivered that message along with Mulvaney to the Freedom Caucus in that battle.
How'd that work out?
Did not work out. Freedom Caucus are elected representatives and they actually think for themselves.
And how did that work out for Donald Trump?
Did not work out well. It's not helped.
And
because he was a big supporter of that Ryan health care bill. I mean, he went, as they said, he's even when they were trying to give him credit, the Ryans of the world said he expended incredible energy and political capital to try to get that done.
So now a guy who does not like to lose, Donald Trump, has listened to advice from Bannon twice and has lost bigly. So now what's happening? Bannon is saying, cut off the Uber right. Kirshner, the son-in-law of Donald Trump, who has been put in charge about almost everything big in the White House, by all accounts, really, really smart, really, really good, but a Democrat and not a fan of Bannon. They're now in a death match behind the scenes, according to some. Bannon has said, I like a good gunfight. Well, I like a good gunfight, but I like a good gunfight where it's fair. And here's why it's not fair. Here's why it's not a fair fight for you, because you're fighting the sheriff's son, the sheriff's daughter. The sheriff's not going to let that go on too long. The sheriff is not going to allow you to off his son-in-law. So forget about gunfights. Let's look at what's probable. Kirshner is bringing in Democrats now to the White House, and the allies of Bannon has said there is a war inside the White House between the Democrats and the Nationalists. The Nationalists are going to lose. Just think of this in your own life. You're going to work. You have a boss who you are close to and you have helped out, but you know that his tendency is to go the other direction away from you. But you've had a good run with him. Now you've had two really bad experiences with him, and he's kind of looking at you sideways. And his family has been looking at you sideways for a long time. And now his family members, he's starting to turn to his family members more and more. And you know when he turns to the family members, you know the family members are saying, you got to get rid of this guy. You got to get rid of this guy. This guy is no good. How many times does that happen before you start looking for a job? Now, you might stay and fight it out, but you're starting to look for a job. Okay? When the family member starts bringing in more people than you can bring in, that all agree with the family members, how long do you have? So Bannon, whether he knows it or not, he's a smart man, I'm sure he knows it, is done soon. His influence is gone. Now, one of the reasons why he has influence is because of the Mercer family. The Mercers are this family that really are propping up Breitbart. They're spending, $16 million of their own money at Breitbart. They are the reason why. They've kind of pushed all of the Bannon stuff into the White House because they came with money and said, hey, we'll help you, Donald Trump. We'll get you elected, but we want these things. Well, I think Donald Trump soon is going to say, you know what? I paid for those things. I did. I made some appointments based on your recommendations. I paid for those things. And this guy's given me advice that keeps losing, and I don't like to lose.
The New York Times reported that exact thing today.
What?
That is exactly how Trump is reacting right now to the Mercers specifically. That they
see
that's exactly. I mean, what
I'm telling
says.
You, this is not just probable. I think this is likely to be the story soon. So then, what happens? Bannon leaves. Now Bannon can leave the White House in shame, but he's also a guy that doesn't like to lose. Now, you can say that maybe he wants to stay and keep some connections with the White House, blah, blah, blah. But why? You go, you're walking the walk of shame back to Breitbart after losing your job to a Democrat. Remember, it was your paper, your website that said, oh, no, that will never happen. He'll never turn left. He's one of us.
After you've been the man, too. I mean, he's been
He's been the man. And he was shown the door by the Democratic son-in-law. Now, Bannon has a guy. He's a guy who likes to. He's got an axe to grind. And he'll find an axe after axe after axe, and he'll grind them all day long. So what happens to Breitbart and Bannon? They start to become an anti-Trump site because Trump has abandoned his people. Remember, all that Bannon really wants is chaos. He wants to burn the whole system down. So that actually helps him by going now on the outside and say, I was part of it. But this guy is a sellout. This guy's dangerous. This guy went and he's a liar. He went and became a Democrat and brought all of his kids in. Well, now he's got the chaos because now he takes the Uber Trumpers and turns them against Donald Trump. The people who are in the middle who held their nose for Donald Trump are now seeing that Donald Trump is going to start looking at universal health care. That's not what they wanted. The left is going to smell blood in the water. Those in Congress who want to put the president in his place, they will do the investigations. And if they don't do the investigations on the midterm elections, oh, the Democrats will. I think you're looking at a lame duck president, if not now, very soon. What happens with Putin? What happens with this strike last night, if it goes well, it helps the president for a little while. But he better have a win here and a win for his base. And if Bannon leaves, I think you're looking at a lame duck president.
And as we are saying this, this is from Mike Allen, who, you know, very well-known insider in Washington. President Trump is considering a broad shakeup of his White House that could include the replacement of White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus and the departure of Chief Strategist Steve Bannon, aides and advisors tell us. Top aide to Trump says he's contemplating major changes, but the situation is very fluid at the time and it is uncertain. Things are happening, but it's very unclear that the president is willing to pull the trigger. Insiders say that the possibilities for Chief of Staff include Kevin McCarthy, House Majority Leader, Wayne Berman of Blackstone Group, a Washington heavy hitter who was an assistant secretary of commerce under George W. Bush, Dave Urban of the Washington advisory firm American Continental Group, former chief of staff to Arlen Specter.
Oh my gosh!
And Gary Cohn, Trump's economic advisor, former number two at Goldman Sachs, who is also close with Kushner. He's part of the sort of Kushner.
If he puts the Arlen Specter or the Goldman Sachs guy in, and Bannon leaves. You think Breitbart is not going to start spinning up that he's a Goldman Sachs guy?
All of a sudden they'll care about Goldman Sachs again.
All of a sudden he'll be a globalist in the White House.
That'll be a fun throwback.
I think the obvious choice is the Arlen Specter guy.
Why would you say the Arlen Specter guy is the person who should be put into this particular role? Do you have any Pat, would you have any input on something?
There's not very often that we get a chance for you to do, Arlen Specter.
I didn't leave the Trump administration. The Trump administration left me.
I almost feel like he's back from the dead every time.
Now, can I take this one step further? You have a lame duck president, okay? If this would happen, you'll have a lame duck president that will only have executive orders and war to do. Executive orders, and war. What usually happens when somebody wants to drive their ratings up? It's usually war. Or it's big gifts. If we have war, if North Korea becomes unstable, if the Middle East becomes really, truly unstable, if we go to war, look what happened last night. Gold went up $15. Stock market took a hit immediately last night. Stock market is already losing money because there saying, you know what, we baked in this cake some things that Donald Trump were going to do, and I don't think he's going to do it now. And so now the stock market is starting to retreat. We have a huge hit somewhere. All bets are off. All bets are off. Because when Ronald Reagan or somebody else said, hey, I'm going to have a big, huge shakeup in the White House, you usually went, either that's bad because he's going to become softer with the press, you know, and he's going to care, or it's good because he's going to be a little stronger. I have no idea what this shakeup means. I have no idea. He's a wild card. Now, with Kushner getting so much power, it tells me that he's probably going to lean towards the Democrats now. But what does that mean? What does that mean for the economy? What does that mean for anything? What does that mean if we go to war?
And it's also amazing to see how the Democrats keep reacting to this, because if they played this smart, he is so vulnerable to agree with Democrats on every policy, Trump.
Oh, my gosh.
All you have to do is charm him.
Oh, yeah.
And instead, the day after inauguration, they're out there protesting.
So weird.
Thank
they
God.
Will not.
How
they
is it they haven't gotten that message?
Because they
All you have to do is say something nice about the guy, and he loves
they
you.
They can't. I'm convinced of it. They can't,
weird, though,
because they've made him so toxic, and he is so toxic, that you just don't want to stand by him.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Let's turn to Stockholm, Sweden. This is going to play well for Donald Trump again. I mean, I hate to say it that way. Three people are dead, but it is in Sweden, exactly where he said there's a problem in it. And everybody in the press, there's no problem in Sweden.
This seems to be the new MO of terrorism, right? Driving into a crowd of people.
I mean, that was part of what they called for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is indeed what happened in Stockholm. And I thought nothing was going on in Sweden. I thought everything was fine. So isn't that what they said?
What do you mean things are going on in Sweden? There's nothing happening
How
in Sweden.
How dare you?
Sweden is on the... I mean, all of Europe is. All of Europe is. Europe is on the brink of disaster. And please don't listen to the mainstream media on this. It's Europe is on the brink of disaster. And it's for multiple reasons, but most of them revolve around multiculturalism.
By the way, the Daily Mail is now reporting at least 5 people dead. And 3 gunmen opened fire, too. So
more on that and Syria when we come back.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat, give me the update on, one, terrorism in Sweden, because nothing is wrong
nothing's
with
going,
Sweden.
Nothing's going on.
And there is absolutely no way anyone was shooting anyone in Sweden because they have strict gun laws. Anyway, go ahead.
Some of the strictest in the world. Up to 5 people, however, are believed to have been killed. Stolen truck rammed into shoppers in Stockholm, and then 3 men leaped out of the vehicle and opened fire on police who surrounded the vehicle. They also ran through the shopping center, stabbing and shooting at people.
How many wounded do you know yet?
It doesn't say here. At least 5 dead.
5 dead. There has to be more than more wounded.
More wounded. 2 suspects are thought to have been arrested.
Probably no description or any names attached or...
No, not yet.
Now, the Swedish government said that it appeared to be a terrorist attack.
Okay. All right. Jumping into conclusions.
They're probably
Protestants.
France.
Yeah. Or, French Protestants,
yes,
probably.
Yes.
So we'll
Ireland.
We'll,
love Irish.
Yeah. Well, there's Irish terrorism.
IRA.
So if they were terrorists,
IRA.
If the government's coming out in terrorists, they know that the IRA, the Irish... Mm-hmm. The Fighting Irish, hello.
Right.
So we'll keep you up to speed on that, and I'm sure there's going to be some huge surprises on who perpetrated that attack. Also with Syria, last night, 59 cruise missiles fired at an airbase in Syria, where the sarin gas was believed to have been originated. Russia is in a tough spot here because Russia brokered the deal. It was Putin's credibility. Putin said, you know what? I've found out, no, we've gotten all of their chemical weapons. And so now, did you get all their chemical weapons? Did you even look for their chemical weapons? So he's under fire from the global community because he was the one that lied to the globe about chemical weapons with Assad. Now that he's used them, we've practiced this or rehearsed this for 2 days. And providentially, the president was meeting with the president of China last night. The reason why I say this is providential is because we have North Korea. North Korea is a much bigger problem than Syria. We cannot go it alone in North Korea. We strike North Korea. Kim Jong-un is crazy enough to launch nuclear missiles. He may not launch nuclear missiles, but he has enough artillery just to fire over the border, the demilitarized zone, and hit Seoul, that it, within 2 hours, Seoul will be wiped out. How many people live in Seoul? Can you look up the...
Oh, I'd say 5 million or so.
Yeah, it's got to be. So...
But this the does
dead, the dead, the death toll will go through the roof. This is like World War II kind of scale conflict. We don't want to go that alone.
10 million
people. So why was this providential last night? Well, because the president has said in several statements he's done with North Korea. He'll go it alone. He doesn't matter. He doesn't care about what the world says. He's done with it. We didn't have any credibility with our allies and with our enemies abroad that we mean what we say. He said earlier this week that Syria would that would not go unpunished or unanswered. And we just answered it. And we answered it in a pretty ballsy way. And we did it while the president was having dinner with China. He's looking at the leader of China in the eye and saying, look, I don't care if anybody joins me or not. We are going to not let that stand. Which reminds me, we need to talk about North Korea because we won't let that stand either. China does not want us destabilizing that area. China has also not wanted to go in and do anything. They like it when we're busy with North Korea. But having us in there, like the Korean War, they're also not going to like. So perhaps Providence has lent its hand and help us make a case to China that you need to take care of North Korea so we don't have to.
And this may have, you know, put a little shock to little Kim in North Korea, too, saying, see, we will. There's a new sheriff in town.
Yeah, there's a possibility. Lauren Cooley is in town. Lauren is somebody who's been listening to this show for a long time. You were in high school when you started listening to the show?
Yep, high school.
Did your parents serve any time for that cruelty?
No, not at all. In fact, I was watching you on TV when my parents were watching one thing, and I was in the other room watching Glenn Beck on TV.
Wow, you were a weird kid. Wow.
Yes, that's true. I'm not going to deny it.
Yeah. So, and then when you were in high school, you read Common Sense.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's the book that made me decide I wasn't just a Republican, but I was actually a conservative, too, and probably conservative first and Republican second.
And why was that? Do you know?
I think it just kind of cut through all the talking points, and it said, like, here's some common sense. No pun intended, yeah. But here's some common sense issues that nobody's talking about. And it explained things so simply that it wasn't like you have to vote for this party or that party. It wasn't you have to toe the party line. It was these are things that are really going to help our country that make sense. They're things that have been around. It's not brand new. Why aren't we talking about these things? Why aren't we thinking about these things? And for me, it clicked and it made sense.
Wow. How old were you at the time?
I was 16 or 17.
Wow. How much would you love to have your 16 or 17-year-old reading on their own something like Common Sense and be like, I'm thinking about these big issues. That's remarkable. So then you live in Florida.
I do.
And you're doing a speaking tour now for college students.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell me about it.
Yeah, so during the election, I was helping students get out the vote and doing a big voter registration program. And then now the election's over. All right, what do we do on campus, right? And so all these students have come to me and they're like, hey, you gave me such great direction during the election, but now what? And so that's kind of the premise of the speaking tour. It's called Make Campus Great Again.
They're allowing you on campuses?
Some campuses where I can get away with it. Last night, we heard screaming and yelling outside the door, and we thought maybe it was protesters. It wasn't, but I thought that would give me some street credit.
Yeah.
Going to different college campuses and basically saying, for so long, we've been playing defense. We wait around for some leftist group on campus to say, we hate the American flag, let's get rid of it. And then we start saying, oh, well, we love the flag, we want to keep it, and we're always playing defense. Why don't we go on offense for these America First policies that we care about? Instead of waiting for some kind of controversy on campus to happen, why don't we start pushing our agenda, going to the student government and saying, hey, we receive taxpayer dollars. We love our country. We want to always prominently display the American flag and get something passed as a resolution on the front end. That way we're not always playing defense. And multiple things, but that's a good example.
When you say multiple things, because you've said a couple of things that kind of put a red flag up in my head, and that's America First, that you have to be careful with America First.
Sure.
It's our principles first. Where do you stand on free speech on campus and safe spaces? And where do people your age stand on that?
Right. So to answer America First, what I always tell people is obviously when it comes to principles, everybody has equal intrinsic value, right? But when you come to a nation state, that's where you have to start deciding with a social contract, what is the role of that organization, that government? And so In that sense, that's what we're talking about, okay. America First
Good.
Policies.
Okay, all right.
Free speech on college campuses is such a difficult topic because it's not even that the administration wants to shut down other ideas, although a lot of times it is. They just like to have control, and they don't like any type of organized chaos. And so for college students on most campuses, and this is even worse on private campuses, there's something called a free speech zone. You can only articulate, controversial values in this small little area. And so what I've actually encouraged students to do on this tour is to go out and purposefully provoke their administration into telling them that they're not allowed to be, talking about some type of issue outside of the free speech zone. So to purposefully go and stand just outside of the free speech zone with a sign that says, I'm not in the free speech zone. I have the First Amendment, whatever it might be. And get that on film, get documentation so that they can actually go and use it either with the student government or trustees, or use it for media or even for a legal case and say, here's a documented example. We've actually shown the administration is trampling on our free speech rights, and then be able to make policy changes
on
campus.
But what do people, I would think that college students would be the first to say, don't trample on my right to speak in any direction. I mean, the reason we have tenure is so that 25 years ago, a professor could say, global warming is going to happen and we're all going to die and we've got to ban oil because it was controversial.
Right.
And needed to make sure he could keep his job. Now we have to be able to have tenure. So some professor could say, this global warming stuff is nothing but crap. On a university campus, it should be the place where you are the most uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think learning is supposed to be exploring new ideas, things that are uncomfortable. And what I've seen, at least, is when I was in undergrad about 4 or 5 years ago, free speech zones, trigger warnings, they weren't really that big of a thing. It's really even been in the last 5 years or so where the left has become so extreme.
Who's driving that? Is it the students? Is it the faculty?
I think it's our culture. And I think the culture comes from a lot of times these AstroTurf protests. That gets into the culture. Celebrities promote it. Different student groups on campus that are left-wing have different organizations that are funded maybe by George Soros, giving them talking points and different activism projects. And then that starts creating where it looks like it's natural and coming from the students.
And do the students, for the most part, left and right, agree with safe zones?
No, absolutely not. And that's what I was getting at is about 5 years ago, people didn't care one way or the other. But I think the farther left our culture gets, the more that people are going to push back. And that's what we're seeing even with teenagers in high school and now on college campuses, is that it used to be counterculture to be liberal. But now we see in Hollywood, in our government for the past 8 years, our culture, the normal culture, is this liberal progressive, be nice, be politically correct. You can only use your free speech in a safe little box where it's away from everybody else. Young people like to be radical. They like to be counterculture. And I think that's where we're seeing conservative values come back, this push against political correctness, a push against trigger warnings. And it's really neat to see in actually polling and trending with younger generations, even younger than millennials, and then this new wave of college students now as opposed to 5 years ago that were voting for President Obama. You know, there's a pushback, and I'm really excited about seeing that on campus. And that's kind of what my tour is about, is these practical ways, these actual tactical steps they can take to make a difference and push back against these things.
Lauren Cooley, laurencooley.com is her web address, and you can find out more about her and what she's doing, laurencooley.com. Nice to meet you.
And thank you for having
me. Thanks for coming by.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So we've got North Korea, we've got Syria, and now
Sweden. Everything's fine.
Thinking about, you know, do you know that this November, I think 21st or 23rd, is my 21st year of sobriety?
No, really?
Wow.
So I turn 21. Which I believe is the universal date for
drinking age.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I believe I have graduated at my 21st birthday that I will be able to drink again.
In a dark moment, you will convince yourself that is true. That is a good analysis.
Luckily, I won't. Mm. But
oh, it is true, Glenn.
Is it? Now, wait a minute. Stu, maybe you're right. Jeffy's making a good point here.
Well, it was not even a dark moment necessarily. Well, let me make it a little darker for you.
Oh, thank you.
Brett Baer reporting, Fox has learned a Russian warship has entered Eastern Mediterranean Sea heading towards two U.S. Navy destroyers that launched airstrikes last night.
Yes. They're going to protect the airspace now.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're going to protect the airspace. They're going to make sure that we don't do anything like that again. Right. They're not going to launch against us. They're just going to stand guard and protect the airspace. That hurts Israel. That hurts us. But if Donald Trump does what he said in the campaign, which is walk away, let them have it. But I think there's going to be a negotiation for this, quite honestly. I think we're going to have to give up the missile shield. We talked about it earlier today. I think we're gonna have to give up the missile shield, which would be horrible. In my opinion, that's horrible. That's giving Poland back to the former Soviet Union, Romania, Georgia, all of that. Just give it back.
I mean, if this is it, right? I mean, it's no one wants any of these things to happen. But if this is it, hopefully we can send a message and move on.
Yes.
You know, I that's my hope.
Yeah, my hope is that he struck. Divine Providence wakes China up, that they take care of North Korea. We leave Syria and Russia alone, and we go back to arguing about things that really are stupid.
Yeah, I mean, say what you want about Trump. He has some real smart military minds around him. I mean, you know,
yes,
Mattis and Master.
Yes,
I mean, it's not hopeless.
Yes, he does. Pray for our nation. Pray for our president.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.